Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Sherry Denham, Dr. Henry Cloud, and your phone calls. Come join us for New Life.
Welcome to a classic program from the archives of New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. All of our calls for this classic program have already been taken, but if you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Now here's Steve.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Henry Cloud. Hey, Henry.
Hey, Stevie.
Hey, what's your next book coming out? Just curious.
Well, one just came out called The Law of Happiness.
The Law of Happiness.
Yeah, and The Law of Happiness, I think the little tagline is something where science and ancient spiritual wisdom agree or can change your life. But the point is, there's been an enormous amount of secular research on happiness and well-being in the last 10 years. And when I looked at all that research, it felt like I was reading the Bible. And so what I did in this book was basically show how scientific research proves that the practices that God has designed for us are actually the life that makes people happy. Your immune system is better, you live longer, your relationships are better, you function better, you reach more goals, you make more money, all of this stuff, right in the scriptures.
That's funny. Good, clean living.
I have healthy, clean living. I have a law of happiness, and let's see how it works out with the research, okay? Law of happiness, don't break the law. What do you think?
That may be the law of avoiding misery. You got to do a little more to be happy.
Okay.
That's the preventing the downside.
Now, isn't there something in the happiness equation about fully losing yourself into the activity with another person where you're not even aware of yourself, kind of you're just so into
it. There are a lot of elements of the research that kind of come together around. I put them together in one concept, and what I call it is engagement. And what the Bible teaches over and over and over is this funny dimension that we call time, that's really a fantasy in a way. Mm-hmm. There's, in some senses, no such thing as time because we are eternal. We're made for eternal. And the parts of us that matter, your heart, mind, soul, and strength, really are not related to time. Mm-hmm. They're eternal. And that's why we can experience memory states and past states and future states as if they're happening now. So the trick is, how do you make time go away so you can be all of yourself? Mm-hmm. And some researchers call that being in the flow. And what we find is, think of this, the person that you're most intimate with, have you ever noticed that that hours go by and you never watch the clock? You lose yourself in the experience. And when you're doing a task that you love, you lose yourself in the experience. When you're doing something you're bored and not engaged with, the time takes forever to pass, right? And so that comes from a set of circumstances that can actually build that experience. I talk about that a lot in the book.
And the name of the book, once again, is The Law of Happiness.
The Law of Happiness.
All right. We
have it here.
And I know, Sherry, that you're writing a book on relationships, and I'd like to help. I'd like to help you title it.
You would?
And
Steve,
is the master titler.
Is that right?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Here it is.
All right.
Got relationships? Okay, maybe it wasn't the.
I was just all of a sudden picturing someone with, you know, this milk on their lip on the title.
You could draw a little
maybe
on their lip.
Yeah. You could have half of a lipstick.
Yeah. Got relationship. Well, we'll keep working on the title for you there. All right. You're listening and watching New Life Live. 1-800-NEW-LIFE to support this program, which we need desperately. Also, 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you need some help with your life. Welcome to the club and call us. You can also find out how to join the club, Club New Life, at 1-800-NEW-LIFE or newlife.com. We'll be back for New Life Live.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Henry Cloud, Dr. Sherry Denham. We're going to go all the way to WFIL in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to Regina. Hello, Regina. Welcome to New Life.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm a member of New Life, too.
Oh, Club New Life? Thank you.
Yeah, Club Life, yeah. I wanted to ask you, I have a niece that lives with me. She's 21. I've raised her as my daughter since she was 16 months old. Mm. She has two children, a two-year-old and a four-month-old who live with me. I believe that my daughter is borderline personality disorder, you know, just because of her abandonment issues with her mom and dad who suffer with drug addiction.
Uh-huh.
She's very verbally abusive, has been physically abusive.
To who has she been verbally and physically abusive?
She was physically abusive to me on November 4th. She, like, threw a phone at me and I got a big bruise on my leg, and the cops ended up arresting her. And she has to go to court now for simple assault.
Good for you. Good for you for making that decision to call the police.
I was calling the police. I called the local crisis center.
Yeah.
Because she was in a rage, not really towards me, but, you know, she had a big fight with her boyfriend and, I mean, the children's father. And
yeah. Okay.
She wasn't in a place. And
well, I think we get it.
I called the police.
I think we get it. What's the question for us then?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Should I allow her to continue to live with me? I mean, what can I do? She's refusing to get help. She says she's going to and doesn't.
Is she attached to you, Regina?
Yes, she is, very.
Okay, well, think about this. The attachment is the leverage, okay? That's your power. And what you do is you use the attachment that you provide and you use the security that you provide as the coming together for her, what you're calling borderline personality. We don't know if it is or isn't. But for her to stay with you and get those two things, then there are certain conditions. And when she breaks those conditions, that's when she loses it. And so the simple way to think about this is you use timeouts. There are consequences. But yes, she could continue to live with you if she lives with you in the way that people live together, which is we don't throw phones at each other. We don't yell. We abide by the rules. We have chores. Nobody lives here for free. Everybody does something.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind
of things. Well, every weekend she goes and stays with the children's father, which means that she works during the week, and on the weekend she goes there, so she hasn't really taken part even with the chores and all that either. Every now and again.
Whoa, that's not okay. Look, my kids are 8 and 10. I tell them, nobody lives here for free, much less if you're 21 and a mother.
Right, okay.
So there is no free lunch. Even a baby doesn't have a free lunch. They have to cry to get fed. Otherwise, smart moms are going to sleep. Well, right, if they don't hear anything.
Well, it's actually abuse of a person to give them the feeling that they get to live there free at whatever age.
Well, and then we've got two kids. We've got a four-year-old and a two-year-old, Regina, that, you know, I'm thinking about.
A four-month-old.
Wow. I mean, there's a lot of, those kids are watching a mom who's out of control. I honestly think she needs to be assessed. Has she seen a psychiatrist or someone to help manage?
She has seen a psychiatrist after the assault thing. She did go to a psychiatrist, and he prescribed Prozac to her, said she was depressed, which we kind of knew that, but she doesn't take that on a regular basis.
Well, but you also mentioned that you talked about counseling, and she kind of goes and doesn't go and this, that, and the other. That could be one of the requirements. You know, you need a list of say-dos for her. What she says she's going to do, she has to do.
Yeah.
And get her in a very, psychologists call this a frame. And so you build a picture within a frame, and as long as you hold the frame and don't alter the frame, then the picture of her life and personality can be painted on the canvas. But you start letting her move the frame around and not stick to the rules and meet the conditions, yeah. You're spilling paint all over the ground.
So just briefly, you could sit down and write out, within the next 14 days, I need to see you going to a support group, taking your medication, and
seeing a counselor.
Maybe we see the counselor together to help the counselor devise the frame and the working agreement and the contract by which you're going to be able to live here.
If these don't fall in place within the next 14 days, and I'm giving you that time to get adjusted to the reality here, then,
or whatever the doctor thinks,
then you will have to move out.
Okay, yeah, because I have to give her 30 days notice.
Well, but first of all, talk this over with a doctor. I mean, you know, we don't know the severity, the dangers. Yep. You have to have contingencies in place if she's impulsive or suicidal and all that sort of stuff. But so don't, you know, this isn't home alone. Don't do this without professional advice. But
Well, I imagine Regina's already, you're probably feeling fear of abandonment because that's her core issue. And a lot of times when there's someone struggling with depression and anxiety coming from a wound like that, it's you feel afraid to let them go. You're concerned about.
I do, especially with her. I mean, if she's screaming, I can't do this. I don't want to be a mother.
Right.
See, there are things that I hear, and that's very frightening to me, especially when I took she and her sister and brother 20 years ago. Yeah.
Of course. So you can't. What Henry's saying, Regina, is you can't do this alone. You
that's
need
right.
support group. You need a support group to help you walk these steps with her and to create the frame and get a path that's clear for her.
Regina, none of us would try to do it alone.
No.
We would get help.
That's true.
Okay, and we know a little bit about this.
All right. So I'm glad you called. We'll send you a copy of Changes That Heal. You may not have picked that up through your Club New Life membership, but you can talk to Diane off the air, and if there's another resource you need, we'll get that to you. I want to go back to this headline, no one lives here for free. Maybe you're listening today, and that's the reason you're listening. Because if you give your kids the feeling that you kind of live here for free, they'll go through life.
Or your husband or wife.
Right. They'll go through life looking for all the other things or places that they can live for free. Now that I'm married,
become an entitled teen.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a number of those right now that I'm seeing. And these parents that are trying to launch these kids at 20 or 21, and they don't want to work.
Yep, that's right.
It's horrible, but parents don't realize that they're feeding that. They're feeding the dragon. They're creating a dependency where the child doesn't even know that they can stand on their own feet. They haven't had to do it.
But, Sherry, they work all day at school, and then they've got all that homework. Why should I have them do anything at home? The chores, and, I mean, they don't have time for that.
And it's even worse than that, Steve. These poor little babies, I mean, the teachers shouldn't correct them.
Oh,
that's going to damage their fragile little self-esteem. Don't you know my child is special?
Mm. Yeah.
And that
I know.
You hear all this junk like that, and this I'm not going to say a bad word, but that's how it feels. It's like there is just this how can I say this? There's a big bucket of information.
Throw up.
That has been thrown out there in the last 20 years about the self-esteem stuff, which is totally unrelated to performance in life, and in for fearing people's, you know, this little kid, I don't want to damage his self-esteem. A child needs a self-concept. They don't really, the self-esteem thing is the wrong road. They need to feel good about their strengths and competencies, and they need to take ownership of their weaknesses and their bad parts, and only expectations and discipline mixed with love and correction and all of that integrate those splits, so you don't get the entitled kid that you're talking about.
Where you remove the work ethic. I mean, that's part of how we know we can accomplish something is through our strengths and failures. But you remove that, and they really are kids that are helpless.
They are.
I mean, they honestly believe... They honestly believe they are helpless. I told one of them this last week. I said,
but they're not helpless in demanding that the world do it for them. They're very powerful in that voice.
No, I get it. You're absolutely right. And I imagine there's a lot of parents that just heard what you said loud and clear because it's a problem.
I cringe when I hear this, you know, teaching your child they're special. Your child is unique. But they're a kid like everybody else. They're a human like everybody else. And the land is level underneath the cross. Mm-hmm. And when they start thinking they're sort of above everybody, because that's how they get treated, they do start to believe that, and the world exists to serve them, and they're miserable kids.
And you result in this thing I wrote about in Reframe Your Life, arrogant entitlement in a marriage. The arrogantly entitled person is never happy, never satisfied, nothing's good enough, and they're miserable. Yeah. So you're setting your kids up for future misery. I want to talk with Melissa from Stafford, Virginia. WAVA is the station. Hello, Melissa. Welcome to New Life.
Hello. Thank you.
Sure. What's going on?
Yes. I was wondering, well, my husband and I have been married for almost 18 years, but he said, you know, he could give up pornography, and I believe he has, but is there any way to know if he still desires to look at it?
Have you asked him the question?
Actually, no. I know he struggles with looking at other women, and we moved from West Coast to East Coast, and we're now in Virginia. But
no, wait a minute. You're married for 18 years?
Almost, yes.
Did he have a porn problem in your marriage?
I really did not know anything about it. He did it.
So he did have a problem.
Well, he doesn't say it was a problem.
Well, why do you think there's a problem?
I found it on, you know, the computer.
You found it on the computer.
At one point, he was deployed, and it was on the computer, you know, when he come back. And he said when he found out that I did not like it, that he could stop it.
Oh, yeah. And he stopped?
Yes, as far as I know.
But he's still looking at other women?
He says it's very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Why doesn't he go deal with that?
I honestly don't know. Just a couple days ago, I suggested that we do counseling, and he's very resistant to that. So I'm really not sure.
Well, you know, it's not just about stopping the pornography. It's kind of shutting down the lust engines that thrive on billboards here, there, or some magazine ad, a beautiful woman walking by. And, you know, there's some men that see a woman walking by and they go, hey, there's a beautiful woman. Wow, she's beautiful. There are other men that undress that woman. They fantasize about that woman. It's a more involved process. And the only way that he's going to get from, okay, I don't look at pornography anymore, to, wow, I am totally committed and dedicated emotionally and spiritually to my wife, I believe, is to get some help for whatever it is leading him to the other woman viewing and what led him to the pornography. He needs help. It's not just about stopping. It's about growing in character and accepting the reality that he's living in. Henry, what do you think?
Well, I'm a little concerned about the resistance to go to counseling.
Mm.
Not necessarily that counseling is the answer, but if that represents a resistance to, you know, to being seen and being known and opening up and, you know, working on things with you, that dynamic is a little bit of a hiding dynamic, and that's something you want to find out what's at the root of that. Is he afraid? Does he have something? You know, what is it that you don't want that in a marriage?
Right.
Okay.
Well, and I go back to the question I asked first, which is, Melissa, have you asked him? You know, behind someone who struggles with pornography is often a woman who is really disempowered, and she struggles to find her voice to ask the questions. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it was for a long time.
Yeah.
And I guess just recently I've been finding my voice. I see someone, I counsel with someone on my own. So
good for you.
Yes.
So you're getting some help and you're getting stronger. Do you happen to have a group of women that you can connect with? Other women who maybe have husbands that struggle with pornography? Because
I
would suggest you get into a group of women so that you can help normalize some of the things that are going on for you and help bolster your strength and courage so that you can walk in and fight for your husband and your marriage.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to send you Every Man's Battle, and I'm going to send you Every Woman's Marriage. I hope that those will bless him and you. And then I think you've got to say to this guy, okay, the least you could do is go to that that Every Man's Battle workshop. And that could really work for the two of you. I hope and pray that he'll get there. See, so many women, their lives totally change when he addresses that issue. 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you want more information about it. We'll be back.
We'd love to hear from you. You can write us at P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here. I'm going to go to Ed right over here in Washington, D.C. Ed, how are you, buddy?
How are you, sir?
Listening on WAVA. We're glad you're with us. What's going on in your life today?
Thank you. Washington, about when is it proper to get a divorce? My wife and I, neither one of us are Christians when we first got married.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to Christ afterwards. And ever since I came to Christ, it's like a dividing thing. At one point, I was getting ready to go to the seminary.
Yeah.
And she had commented to me that she didn't want to marry a preacher. Fast forward, we've been married for about 20 years now, a little over 20 years. And in the last 2.5 years, she has not even spoken to me. She sleeps downstairs on the sofa. There's no conversation, no intimacy.
Okay. Now, look, here's my question.
Yes, sir.
Now, you got married and you were in love. Now she's downstairs sleeping on the sofa.
Yes, sir.
Radical difference there.
Yes,
but
sir.
In the middle there, what was it that brought about that separation and alienation? How did that happen in the beginning where it kind of shifted over to she's starting to head out of the bedroom and down the stairs?
It first happened the first time when we had an argument, believe it or not, over a movie, one of those horror movies, and I said I didn't feel like going to watch it. And she pulled a knife on me.
Okay.
And,
all right.
And I said, what's going on with you? Are you crazy?
That was your first incident?
A knife?
Yes, sir.
Does it ramp up from there?
It went away, and nothing happened for a while, and everything was cool.
Stop. Hold on a second. I'm curious here. How does it go from you got a knife in my gut to cool?
It took some time. I slept in one room. She slept in the other room.
Did she say, gosh, I'm sorry, what a crazy thing to do. I'll never do that again. And that's how it got cool?
We did. We had a talk about it. And I said,
you think?
Well,
I mean, seriously, I'm serious. Like, she pulls a knife on you and somehow
life goes on.
Life goes on. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Her upbringing, sir, was her. She wasn't raised, but her mother died when she was a baby.
Yeah.
Her father never owned her, who raised her. Her and her grandfather used to always fight with knives, and then they would make up afterwards.
That was a pattern for her that didn't seem unusual.
Did she ever pull a knife after that?
No, she didn't.
Well, congratulations on handling that situation that kept your skin from being pierced sharply. So we're glad about that. Now, what's the question for us then? You got a wife sleeping downstairs.
Well,
you're a pastor, right?
Well, things got worse. The more I got involved in Christ, the more she distanced herself from me. And so when my kids started to get baptized, it became more distant. She didn't show up at any of the kids' baptisms. Friends and family, other folks were coming. She didn't come, and got further apart. But she said to me one day, "It's your family, not mine." And it kind of went crazy from that point.
Hmm. Well, we're sorry about that.
So, I talked to her. I said, "Listen, God's got a plan for the whole family, not just for me and the kids to be baptized."
Yeah.
And she said she didn't need God.
Hey.
And then I found out from her cousin who called me in November last year that she was assaulted and incest and raped and raised as a witch in her family.
Wow.
In North Carolina. And then that there were all the preachers and ministers in her family have always done things with members of the flock.
And you're asking if it's okay to divorce her now? Is that the question?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Because it's a weird thing for the children to see.
Mm.
The youngest is 7, the oldest is 20.
Think? The youngest is 7, and what are the other ages, Ed?
I'm sorry, sir, say that again.
What are the other ages, 7 and what?
7, 10, 13, 9 and 15.
Okay. Now, is she doing anything crazy now?
No, she just, she does not speak to me. She looks at me really mean. If I come in her room, she'll leave. She does do crazy stuff. When she washes dishes, she won't wash them. When she cooks dinner, she only cooks dinner for the kids.
Okay.
When she does laundry, she'll just do that.
And obviously, she's not willing to go get any help.
No, I moved out 2 years ago, and I said, well, you know, if this is how you're going to act, no need for us to be married, and we'll just get separated when the year's over. We'll get a divorce. She said she was going to go to counseling.
Okay.
I moved back in.
Okay, that right there. Right there.
Stop.
Right there.
This is a great sign.
Yeah, right there, Ed, is what happened, is you moved back in.
Right.
You are a pleaser, and you have been trying to please a woman who's incredibly wounded, and she's unattached. She's fearful. She's avoidant. Even she went to the point of pulling a knife on you, and it seemed to go away pretty quickly. She's been crying out for help, but in a very muffled sort of way. And you guys have been allowing that pattern to continue for years.
Ringing true?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and Ed, what's really, I want to draw your attention to a little bit of a map here. You go from, you know, something really bad to kind of the other extreme. It got cool, and now if something's really bad, you haven't spoken in 2 years or whatever, she's lived on the couch, and then you go to divorce, right? What I would do is I would reel the tape back, like Sherry's saying, and say to her, look, this isn't working. I want it to work, but I am going to move out and figure out custody for the kids and all of that until you decide that you would like to make it work. And at that point, what we'll do is we'll go into counseling together and work our way back together if that's what you would like. So you have a separation that has a structure to it as a disciplinary healing agent.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay in the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you a set of 4 devotionals, 100 Days of Character, Peace, Prayer, and the newly released 100 Days of Healing. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops.
I did go to Take Your Life Back. That's been immensely helpful to me. That's why I continue to support the ministry with the hope that not only am I helping my own situation, that I'm helping others as well.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. Find out more information about New Life or any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to the program.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here. Wish you could join us on some of our breaks. We counsel each other, and sometimes it's more painful than others. I want to say one thing.
Some of us are really glad they can't listen,
yeah,
right?
Right. I want to mention one thing to Ed. Ed, are you still there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Before you lay out the stuff that Henry said, which I think is absolutely the way you've got the best chance, I think you ought to remind her of something. And that is that she is the love of your life. That you picked her. That you said through thick and thin, you're going to be there, through better or for worse. And what I'm talking about is this, you know, rather than divorce her, I'm kind of saying, hey, drag her back mm-hmm. into the relationship a little bit mm-hmm. by reminding her that you have feelings for her, that you picked her, that she's special to you, versus it's all landmines and knives and all the kind of stuff that you're doing in combat.
Right.
And then once you've said that, and she's probably going to hear it, may not acknowledge it, then you lay out what's going to happen.
And Ed, she is extremely attached to you. Extremely. Why are you laughing?
because when I asked her if we could work out a separation before,
right,
and the kids, she never responded. She never said a single word. She looked at me, and she never said anything.
Exactly.
So what? I don't see any attachment at all.
Oh, my goodness. Now, come on. Let's just say you're a human being who, like, has a pulse and wants to have a life. Do you spend 2 years of your life, like, sleeping on a couch where somebody lives that you don't talk to unless there's something holding you there? And
well,
what happens
for the kids.
Well, there's other ways to take care of kids, but here's what I'm telling you. The one time that she said she wanted to go to counseling was when you said you were going to separate from her. It was the loss of the attachment that motivated her action, and this is what people don't realize, that the one that's acting out is the one that has the deepest dependency. And so that's your leverage. And see, what she is afraid of intimacy, she's afraid of full connectedness, so she has created what psychologists call a schizoid compromise. And what that means is there's a split, and she compromises to get both of what she wants. She gets to have you and not be close to you. She gets to have you and keep the attachment and not have to deal with conflict. And there's a bunch of compromises here that you're enabling. So use the leverage of the attachment, and it may bring her into a structure that will enable her compromise in a good way. She doesn't have to move back in. She just has to go to a counselor's office, right? So try that.
Okay. Yeah. I'm really glad you called.
Go talk to a good counselor first and let him or her kind of outline it for you.
That's right.
You know, sometimes I was sick. It was you were talking, Henry. I was thinking, just seeing her kind of as a dove in the cleft of a rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I just saw this cleft and this dove in this crevice, and all you can kind of see is their eyes. There's a really fearfully detached person there that needs to be rescued, mm-hmm. but she's living like an angry adolescent in their home.
Yeah,
and he's, you know, you don't respect that, and it's hard to even love that, right? Because you're, I imagine he's feeling angry and frustration over that position. But what you called out is so true. It is that attachment relationship that's going to be the hook to pull the dove out.
So you're saying that inside of every vulture, there's a fragile dove that's afraid. Is that right?
Well, if the vulture had eaten one earlier that day, possibly.
Well, she's already shown us that inside of every scary butterfly, there's this beautiful, what was the name of that butterfly that you held up
Beauty
on the previous
is unveiled
show?
In vulnerability.
Yeah, but you actually brought a butterfly in and
I
showed
did.
It to our viewers.
I did.
You can't hear it on radio, but when they're threatened, they close
they
up
close
and they're really
up.
Kind of ugly and look like the bark of a tree.
Yeah,
but
with eyes on the outside. I mean, they're frightening because that's the very thing they close up to keep predators away. Dove in the cleft of the rock. I'm going to close up to keep you away because I don't trust you. I haven't trusted anyone. We've got a woman that has years of abuse. And so she doesn't trust anyone. Someone has got to call her out.
Right. All right. But if they feel safe, then that beauty emerges.
Yep. The beauty can come out.
Lenora from Greenville, South Carolina. She watches us on the NRB Network television. Hello there, Lenora.
Good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Great. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
How could we help?
I'd like to find out how I can successfully live with a passive-aggressive mate. 26 years married.
Define success.
Not going through the emotional mood swings and going from extremely good times to a very dark side.
Okay.
And that's been the thread of it for 26 years.
Yeah. Real simply, you do not depend on him for anything.
What do you think?
Tell me how to do that.
Okay.
How do you not depend after 26 years?
Well, you use the 26 years pattern to instruct you that depending on him hasn't helped. You listen to the 26 years. And for example, he's passive aggressive. He acts out in ways he says he'll do something, he doesn't do it, right?
Not more so saying he'll do things and not do them. He's usually pretty good about that because
okay, well, where does the passive aggressiveness?
The passive aggressive is I would think, if he is confronted, then he goes to complete shutdown, maybe 3-4 days, 5-6 days.
Right.
Now it's a little better because I call him on it, and he doesn't do it as long. He just may do it more frequently.
Right. So my point is, if you are going to confront him on things, then you don't depend on his showing up for the next 4 or 5 days. So you unplug from needing to do that, because passive aggression needs something to resist, and so you're trying to get him reengaged in this, that, and the other. He has something to push against and feel strong. And so if you said, you know, here's what I think when you want to talk about it, if you want to talk about it and deal with this issue between us, and I love you and I want to work it out, then call me. You know, until then, I'll be around.
So,
and the gap and the longing.
Does counseling help in these situations?
Of course. Yeah, okay. But I was just answering.
He dug his heels in pretty much and said, up until this point where I'm basically threatened, if you don't go, I leave.
Well, hold on a second. Instead, do what I'm telling you to do.
Okay.
What you're saying is, we have a problem. Okay, would you like to join me in solving the problem? He says no, or he resists it. So I can't depend on you to help me solve the problem. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go to counseling. And I'm going to talk about us, and I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do.
Henry said don't depend on him for anything. You can't depend on him to go to counseling.
Exactly. That's my point, okay? So now Lenora goes to counseling to talk about the marriage and say, well, then I need to figure out what I'm going to do and you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm going to go. If you'd like to come, you're welcome to come. The appointment's Tuesday at 3 o'clock. And it's likely that it will scare him to death, and he's out there on his own. You're giving him his rope. Okay, so you go to counseling, and now what's he going to do? Why don't you in there talking about me? Well, that's fine. If you don't, then show up. If not, I'll be in there talking about you.
Okay.
So you're unplugging from the tug-of-war with the passive-aggressive, which you have to do.
Pretty cool, huh?
Pretty cool. If I can, after 26 years of playing the dance along with him, then I really do need to go so I can get my issues resolved too.
Yeah, and you know, when you
give me a better option.
You wouldn't want to hear the better option.
Oh, yes, we would. What is it?
The better option at this point, being alone might sound pretty good.
Well, I gave you a legal way to be alone and a healing way to be alone, which is basically to not have your happiness be dependent on somebody's behavior who is not going to behave in ways that make you happy. Yeah. Is that a sentence?
That's a sentence.
Run
All right.
Sentence.
I hope that's helpful to you. And a lot of folks are depending on people, trying to depend on people that have proven themselves over and over again, over decades, they can't be dependent on.
Well, think about it. From his perspective, if he pulls away for 4, 5, 6, 7 days and he's got someone that's checking in on him and are you okay and what's going on? And, you know, it's like leaning over the crib. Somebody stays sick in their passive-aggressive tendencies. It's not about learning how to live successfully with a passive-aggressive. It's stop leaning over the crib, right?
There it is.
There you go.
When you stop leaning over the crib, you do what my daughter did this morning.
What was that?
Crawled out of her crib and walked down the stairs and presented herself to the family.
There you go. And all her lovely maturity.
Yeah.
It is frightening how much freedom is taught in the scriptures. When you look at every single, I mean, I could go on and on, but look at the parable of the talents. That he leaves them with their talents, goes away on a journey, comes back.
Do what
they
you
have
want.
The freedom to screw up their lives or not, but you're going to be held accountable. Look at the rich young ruler. Look at the prodigal story.
Freedom.
On and on and on. We are afraid to grant the freedom to each other that God has designed that will make life work.
That'll preach. We'll be back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
All right, we are back. Steve Arterburn here, and I'd like to go to...
Hey, Steve.
Yeah?
Can I say something real quickly about our previous caller?
Yes.
When we're talking about this, the separation, I was saying that should be, you know, don't think about divorce and until that, but there's another middle step in there that is possible. And I want the listeners to hear this. You don't just show up and say, you know, necessarily we're gonna separate, and you know, until you do XYZ. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you go and present a plan to them that can prevent the separation. Mm-hmm. And then you say separate, and if you want to then turn around and join the plan. So sometimes the separation is actually the consequence of not working the first step in the plan. He was somewhere kind of in between those two, and it got mm-hmm. muddy, but that's a good option for people sometime where the separation comes after the first bid to go and heal and do something about it.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, I want to talk with Angela from Washington, D.C., listening on WAVA. Hello, Angela. Welcome to New Life.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
How could we help today?
I have a question dealing with the church, relationships at church. I've been going to this one church for several years, about four, and the pastor has started to hit on me.
Okay, how does what does he say?
There's pictures that he'll pull up from me at various church events that he says that he pulls up just to look at.
Like pornography pictures or what kind of pictures?
No, just at church events.
Like pictures of her in the choir or something like that.
Yes.
He's taking these pictures with his phone?
I'm not sure how.
Okay. And so he said, look, I just love to look at these pictures of you.
Yes.
Okay.
What's your question?
And then...
I just want to hear one other example of flirting.
There's, like if I have to talk to him in counseling of any sort, if I call him, he'll say that, well, if someone's around me, I won't answer, but I'll call you back. Or if someone asks if I'm counseling you, just don't let them know.
Is he counseling you?
Just pastoral and financial.
What?
He's getting the church.
Well, it doesn't matter the content, but is he counseling you, or do you meet with him one-on-one?
Individually, no.
How do you meet with him?
Usually in a group.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so what is the question for us then?
I just want to know how to handle the situation. Like, I don't feel safe there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I get a good word from the church and from the pastor and everything, but I wouldn't want to find myself alone with him.
Yeah. Do you feel any responsibility to other women who might not be quite as strong as you?
I don't know.
I mean, either you're the most fabulous person that has, and you're the only person that's ever attracted his attention, or you're one of several people.
Oh, yeah.
And
do you know any of the others?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
And so I think you, in what you plan on doing, I think it's important to help other folks as well as protect yourself. Why would you continue to go to a church where you know the pastor doesn't have integrity?
Right.
Why would you?
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
But you are.
But I am.
Okay, so why are you?
Just with, just because of the fact that I think that I'm getting a good word there.
Well, let me.
Although it no longer holds any weight.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so it's not, I mean, is it a good word if it's like got all this, you know, these vines
in the back
growing around his head, right?
Right, yes, sir.
So you got to do something. So what do you want to do?
Before I leave, should I confront him on it, or should I?
You know, let us talk with you. I don't think that you're going to find one answer to this.
Okay.
Yeah.
My hunch is there's a range of possibilities. But the one that came to mind for me was, I think a pastor is in a position where he's in spiritual authority.
Right.
And he has the power to wreck a lot of lives.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of lives. And so I don't think you treat it just like, you know, Joe Blow on the work site who's doing this, where you go to Joe and say, Joe, you know, stop it.
Okay? Yeah, it's not just a matter of being inappropriate.
Right. And if you don't stop it, then I'm going to go talk to the boss.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering is that that you tell him that you don't like what he's been doing, and that you have fears, and that you would like to, or you are going to also talk to an elder or the elder board or something like that. Now, that is fraught with all sorts of difficulty because you're going to turn into a he said, she said, and this, that, and the other.
Right.
Another option is that you talk with him and you get some sort of provable assurance from him that he is going to deal with his problem. I just don't know how you do that without oversight.
And I
what do you think?
I think both of those are good ideas, but I think when you talk with him, you need to have another female with you. Are you married?
No.
Okay.
Are there female elders at your church?
Yes.
Well, I would go to one of those and say, I need your help in confronting the pastor about an issue, because if you don't, before you have a chance to approach the elders, he will have already discounted you
right.
and written you off as a crazy person, and they'll
right.
believe him because
right.
he's their pastor.
Well, I haven't said anything yet.
So I would contact a female
yeah.
elder and say, I've got a dilemma here.
In the initial meeting.
And I would just go to him directly, but it's really not safe for me just to go without a witness.
Okay.
So I want that. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
And also, before you even do that, make sure that you've got your buddy system all in place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your support system.
Because
whatever,
you're
going to get
attacked. When it comes down, just, you know, Angela, you're going to feel alone. You're going to miss your body of believers. And I
mm-hmm.
think that's what Henry's
yeah.
touching on. You're going to have to expect that and just be prepared for it. My encouragement for you, it would feel like the right, I'm not saying this is the right thing, but I think that it does need to be shared with someone, like they said. But I'm proud of you for calling. I'm
yeah.
proud of you for bringing it out. I hear the timidity even in your voice. You know what I mean? I
yeah.
know this is so scary. And the dominoes are going to fall. And you are going to feel that in the body.
And you know what?
You did the right thing.
That's right. And what you may not know, Angela, by taking the step of courage, they may have heard this two or three times and dismissed it. And there's
yeah.
one more complaint that kind of becomes the straw.
Yeah.
yeah.
It gets them to finally
mm-hmm.
think. Well,
it's
maybe
the tipping point.
That's exactly
yeah.
right.
And Angela, you're not holding the secret anymore.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
That's the collusion. So.
All right. You know, a lot of women subconsciously love the attention, and so they keep it going. They don't
mm-hmm.
want to have an affair with the pastor, but they kind of keep the attention going.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really great when you can say to yourself, all right, this isn't right. This, you know, I've got a responsibility here. And that there are other women, most likely. I'm not just this fabulous human being that's
yeah.
being singled out. Most likely there are other folks around this situation. I'm going to send you a copy of Toxic Faith, and it's written about guys just like him.
Okay, here's a question in you guys' collective experience.
With 1 minute and 47 seconds
okay,
left.
Okay, we're working with churches and hearing the story a thousand times. What percentage of the time is it just one woman?
Zero.
yeah, it's not.
It's not double digits.
No,
right?
No, it's one woman maybe if you're the first one to be approached.
It's
but
a
it's,
pattern.
Yeah, it's
And it's
right.
a pattern that needs
yeah.
to be called out.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, and what a gift when it is handled before the big, horrible church split breakup
yeah.
that we've all seen here.
Yeah.
We love you. We care about you. We need your help. Would you support this program, please? And call us about Every Man's Battle and the New Life Weekend. We want to see you helped. At the same time, we need your help. And the same number is the number to call for either one. If God is nudging you to get up and do something with your life, do it. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again on Monday for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.